Good morning again. I'm Kathleen Dunn, broadcasting live today from the Pabst Theater Pub, which is on Wells Street. We're right across from the historic City Hall in Milwaukee. And if you were thinking about coming down to visit us, I think that would be a very good idea. We have donuts. We have great guests. We have a very friendly and knowledgeable audience. And they have great historical perspective on elections. It's terrific. So please come and see us. Thanks, everybody, for being here. This hour, we have a panel. We're going to have a wide-ranging discussion. Last night, there were so many issues that were discussed in the presidential debate. We're going to look at the importance of Wisconsin, when Wisconsin may have played a historical role in electing a president or keeping or denying a president re-election. We have three guests with us here at the Pabst Theater. Mike Gouchet, no stranger to those of us in the Milwaukee area or the state, for that matter. His show, which is considered a go-to show for everybody who's running for anything and for any kind of political analysis, is Upfront with Mike Gouchet. I'm sure you've seen it on television all over the state. Mike is a distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, and he knows his elections. Mike, thank you very much for being with us. Also joining us is Paru Shaw, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Paru Shaw, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Abdur Chowdhury is Chair of Economics at Marquette University here in Milwaukee. Thank you so much for being with us. I promise you we'll take many more phone calls, all of your comments appropriate this hour, because we'll be discussing so many different subjects. Our number is 800 for today, 642-1234. And you can also go to talk at WPR.org. Let's start with a little bit of history, Mike Gouchet. Have there been times in our recent memories or before when Wisconsin was just crucial in a presidential election?
I think it's been a battleground state for some time now, excluding 2008 when Wisconsin went heavily for Barack Obama. If you go back to 2004 to 2000, the state's been in play in those years. We've had margins where one candidate has had 5,800 votes more than the other back in 2000. 2004 was a margin of about 11,000 votes. So, I mean, it's been one of those states that in recent times, in the last decade or so, it's been very important to both political parties.
We noticed this week, I was talking with somebody yesterday about the appearance of Michelle Obama today, Bill Clinton coming up this week. Is that an indication to you that the Democrats are worried about Wisconsin, or is it not?
Well, I think they're both parties, and I've talked to leadership in both parties. They believe this race is very close in the state of Wisconsin. They believe the presidential race is close. They believe the Senate race is close. And Wisconsin becomes something of a its importance depends a bit on what happens in other parts of the country. Ohio is obviously, Mitt Romney's practically taken up residence there over the last couple of weeks. But Wisconsin is sort of state that potentially means a lot. If you're Mitt Romney and you can't win Ohio, you have to put together a number of other swing states in order to get to 270 electoral votes. So is it a must-win for Mitt Romney? Republicans say it's not a must-win. They say it's a will-win. The Democrats have said to me, yeah, we believe it is a must-win. We intend to win here, and that if we do win Wisconsin, they think that pretty much would put them in a position where they would win the election. So it's still a very, very important state, and the activity that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks in particular suggests that both parties view it as still very much in play.
Yeah. Professor Paru Shaw, what did you learn new from last night's debate?
I think that I was impressed with both candidates ramping up their desire to win. I think they really made it obvious to the public that this is a race that they are both very much in. And because of Obama's performance in the first debate, it really, I think, set up Mitt Romney to be, again, finding himself very closely tied with the president in terms of polls. And so I was impressed with both of their ability to really put out their message again, over and over again, last night.
Mm-hmm. I like the format. Did you like the format? I just thought that the questions were very good. And we finally got to some issues that people have ignored during this whole campaign, which I thought was It moved. We had one, we learned about a lot of issues during that 90 minutes.
Yeah, I would say that the first debate, there was a lot more of just the general talking points that we heard all through this campaign. And at this debate, we were able to hear them talk about things that they hadn't talked about before.
Mm-hmm. Professor Chowdhury, what did you learn from last night?
Basically, there are a couple of things. Obviously, President Obama did what he had to do in order to basically, you know, raise his base. A couple of things is that the economy is still sort of the focal point of both campaigns. And since we have seen some improvement in the economy in the last couple of months, so I think that helps President Obama. On the other hand, the job issue is a big issue. It's a big challenge. And there, I think Governor Romney scored some points. But overall, I think a number of economic issues came up in the discussion yesterday.
Mm-hmm. What points do you think the governor scored on the economy?
The governor, I think, on the energy issue, he did a couple of things. He raised a couple of issues. For example, the question of, you know, what is happening to gas price, for instance. You know, it was $1.86 when President Obama came to office. It's around $4 today. So that was, I think, he scored some points. On the tax issue, I think Governor Romney did have some problem explaining his position, especially on the deduction side. But overall, I think the number of new issues came up.
Mm-hmm. I was heartened to see, I don't know if they're just a microcosm, but I was heartened for our young people who were on the panel the last half hour, who are so enthusiastic and they're working together and they're all involved in politics. And I was thinking about young people 4 years ago and how they really turned out. It was a very exciting election last year because it was a first. It was a remarkable moment in American history. I know that you study this particularly. What about the election this go around? Because it comes down to, obviously, I'm stating the obvious, who goes to the polls? And there are deep questions as to whether or not young people will be as involved and whether or not minority voters will be as involved. What do you think?
I definitely think that the young vote, mobilizing the young vote, is going to be a little bit more difficult this time than last time because it's not a landmark election, as you said. But I think every time the candidates talk to their base and rile up their base, which they did yesterday, you're going to see more young people coming out to participate and to mobilize. At the same time, I would argue that in the last 4 years, the thing that has really changed is the Latino vote. Over the last 4 years, the number of Latinos who are eligible to vote in the United States has changed dramatically. And this is why we now have states like Virginia and Arizona that are essentially on target to flip. And so I think that's really going to be where we see some significant shifts in who, in the extent to which voter turnout matters differently than last time.
And the Latino vote is crucial on what issues? Is there widespread agreement among Latinos on those issues?
Most of the polls, and I think my colleague can speak more to this than I can, shows that Latinos are strongly Democrat at this point. And Obama's position on immigration has really put him in their favor. And he continues to to frame the issue as bigger than immigration, which I think is also important. It's an issue about their rights here as Americans. And I think that's really going to, again, bring them out in terms of their vote. And that should make a difference in many states, including Wisconsin.
Do you agree, Mike?
Well, I think if you look at the polling, you see Obama with about 65%, 70% Latino vote. I mean, it's an enormous margin, enormous advantage. And I think, frankly, some of what's happened there is that during the Republican presidential primary, there was a lot of tough talk on immigration. And I think you're seeing some of that reflected in those numbers today, that people who have listened to the campaign and have paid attention for a while are still trying to work through some of what was said earlier in the campaign. So I do think that's, so far, worked to the president's advantage.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think both of the candidates address the issue of immigration? Romney did nail the president for this is an issue that you said you were going to bring up right at the beginning of your administration. You didn't do this. The president nailed Romney on supporting the Arizona law, which he said was terribly restrictive. Were they both good on this issue? Did they make valid points criticizing each other? Professor Chowdhury, you want to start?
I think on the immigration issue, President Obama raised a number of points which I don't think Governor Romney had a good answer to. For example, when Governor Romney talked about the e-vote, about the Arizona law, President came back with the idea that Governor Romney's immigration advisor was the main architect of the Arizona law. So Governor Romney cannot hide away from the Arizona law. And I agree with Mike. Basically, what had happened was during the Republican primary, all the candidates were trying to rile up their base. In the process, they tried to be as tough on immigration, at least in words, as they could be. Now, I think that is coming back to hurt Governor Romney in the general election. He's trying to move to center, but I think he hasn't moved enough to basically generate any interest in a Latino group.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the Libya exchange last night? I must say that I thought that that was probably one of the more dramatic moments in the debate. I thought it caught everybody off guard. The moderator's comment caught people off guard, but it was just a, it was one of those moments that I do think we'll remember from that debate. It stopped the room. Mike?
Well, I think it was a powerful moment. Debates are filled with moments, some of them more important than others. I think that one, at least in this presidential election, will probably go down as one of the more important moments. There are people today, if you listen to the world of pundits, which we should take with a grain of salt.
But of course.
If you listen to that today, there are, frankly, are some Republicans and conservative commentators who were disappointed with how Governor Romney handled that question. They felt there was an opportunity there and that he did not capitalize on. And I think if you watched some of the coverage last night on the various cable networks and you saw some of these groups of undecided voters, you have to be very careful when you're talking about a tragedy. And I heard a couple of voters say last night that they were just a little bothered that politics was entering into a discussion about the tragic deaths of four people in Benghazi, that this was something that they were just a little uncomfortable with. So it's a fine line. If you're trying to press this as an issue, and the Romney camp clearly feels there is an issue there, that the Obama administration's story has changed over time. And they believe there's something there that is worth discussing. But it has to be sort of a nuanced discussion. It has to be done in a certain way in order for it to be effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going into the debate, my own feeling was that on the Benghazi issue, Governor Romney had an opening that he could have used. Unfortunately, the way he placed his arguments put him in the defensive right now.
And it was an issue that I didn't think that Vice President Biden handled all that well in the vice presidential debate. He was kind of caught off guard with that and was probably nailed rightfully for not having a more complete answer. The thing that gets me, does anybody else think this? It's just amazing that Benghazi has become this huge campaign issue. And sometimes I think whatever the news of the day is or whatever happens in the next over 2 weeks will determine how we vote in some ways, because it's what's played over and over and over again. The media is not on all kinds of issues. They've been on Benghazi. Can somebody tell me why that happens? And do you think that we've reached an age where whatever the news of the day is influences our vote in a much more substantial way than it used to?
I can comment on this. I think, you know, in political science and political communication, we would call this the primacy effect, right?
What effect?
The primacy effect.
Primacy.
Right? So
yeah.
Whatever is most in people's minds at the time when they're voting matters. And this is why when you look at forecasts and predictions of the vote, there's some wiggle room, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. Things could dramatically change. It's unlike, it would have to be something that really shifted how people saw one of the candidates, though. And I think the Benghazi situation is interesting because Mitt Romney has been trying to be very hard on Obama on his foreign policy. And this was, I think, going into this campaign, going to be a slam dunk for him. And when it didn't turn out that way, you could see he was actually a little bit flustered. And the real-time fact check by Candy also, I think, was a bit disconcerting, right? Like, well, oh, so he did say that, and we know that right now. And so I think there is some possibility that things could dramatically shift, but it would have to be, I think, a very unusual and large event.
And you've been in the media for a long time, in addition to all your other work, Mike. What did you think? Candy's taken some criticism for fact-checking on the spot. I kept thinking after she said it, I wonder if she's right, you know? I mean, that was really quite a thing for her to step in there and say that, because she maybe could have been wrong. But did you feel uncomfortable with that or not?
I think it's important, and I've moderated a few
yes,
contentious debates over
yes.
the years. I think it is important to try to get to the truth. I do believe that. And I think that was the attempt last night. Afterwards, she said that she may have been, maybe didn't express what she was trying to say as well as she could have. That she said in the main, she thought the point that Governor Romney was trying to make was probably on target. But what she was trying to say is that the president did use the word terrorism when he gave his remarks in the Rose Garden. And so she was trying to make sure that that was clearly understood. But to some, depending on your political persuasion, to some that seemed like she was siding mm-hmm. with the president. And that's what's hard about this right now. I will tell you personally, people are so hardened in their beliefs right now that they hear the truth sometimes that they want to hear. And I will say that goes for both parties.
The truth.
And believe me, I can show you my email that reflects that. It's depending on who's saying what, mm-hmm. People can have a very different take on that. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I do think that we've sort of entered this age where you are entitled to your own set of facts. I'm not saying that's right, but that's what people believe. Mm. My facts are different than your facts. Facts are not facts. They're my facts according to a worldview. And I think that's a challenge that the media faces, really.
It's dangerous.
It's trying to be the independent arbiter of events like this.
Yeah. We will pause for a moment and we'll return. I'd like to get the audience involved. We have a live audience, and we rarely have this. So please, if you have comments, we would love to hear from you. Brett's wandering around with a microphone, so he will get you with the microphone, and then you can give your comments. And we have a ton of people on the phone as well, so I promise we'll get to you in just one moment. Three guests with us this hour, our political panel. Abdur Chaudhry is chair of economics at Marquette University. Haru Shah is professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee, and Mike Boucher, distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, host of Upfront with Mike Boucher, and he has, we should remind you, moderated many, many, many debates, presidential candidate debates, gubernatorial debates, you name it. He's done it. We're glad he's here. All right. Phone calls in a moment. We're broadcasting live from the Pabst Theater, and we invite you to come on down. There's still time. There are still donuts. There is still coffee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, broadcasting live from the Pabst Theater Pub across from beautiful City Hall in downtown Milwaukee, and we're going to go to your phone calls and also to the audience. Our phone number is 800-642-1234. You can send your comments to talk@wpr.org, or if you're lucky enough to be in our audience, we will go to you in our audience, and we'll start with somebody in the audience. Hi.
Hello. My name is Paul. I live in West Bend. And I want to make just an observation about the Libya comment last night. It appeared to me that Obama kind of set something up there. If you watched when Romney made his first move toward Candy, he was looking back at Obama like, I want to, you know, he expected an argument, some kind of comment. And all Obama said was, continue on, just move on. And I think if you look at what Romney did after that, he was somewhat confused, a little bit hesitant about what he should do next. He hesitated, and I think that was kind of a setup.
Mike, what do you think?
Well, I don't know what the motivation was or how it would play out. Interesting observation. These candidates are, as they would say, coached up. I mean, they really
yes.
have prepared for
yes.
just about everything. I think very little in debates happens by accident. But occasionally there are moments where people go with their natural instincts. And I don't know whether the president had the response he did because he anticipated that the conversation might go there, or whether it was something that just seemed like the thing to do. It's hard to tell, but I will say this again. They undergo a lot of rehearsal for this, so they're prepared for just about everything.
He did for the second one.
You could be right. I don't know.
Didn't for the first one, probably. Let's go to some phone calls. Mark in Waukesha. Hi, Mark.
Yes, good morning, Kathleen. So if I were watching or not following the debate and not following the campaigns and saw the debate for the first time last night, I might have thought that Governor Romney was really looking out for my interest in the middle class. But personally, I found that his recent position and that of the GOP a bit disingenuous with their appeal to the middle class. And I would cite some of the largest donors, like the Koch brothers or Karl Rove. And they certainly represent special and big business interests. So even if Romney was sincere about his current position, I would consider that Congress would likely still hold the Republican line. But then more specifically on taxes, Governor Romney cited Canada's corporate income tax rate of 15%, excuse me, and the U.S. rate of 35%. And I wonder what the effective rate is when GE pays no income tax. But again, I think this links.
Thank you, Mark, very much for the call. We got a big chunk of the big topic here, and let's go to our economist, Professor Chaudhry.
Yeah, on the tax issue, I think there was a couple of problems that Governor Romney faced. And the main problem is what he's suggesting is a 20% cut across the board. And the problem I think he's having is when he said that his tax cuts would be revenue neutral. And in order to be revenue neutral, you have to come up with some sort of cuts in spending or some deduction cuts. And this is where he's having problem. Even if you, just for the sake of discussion, you cut all the deductions that we get in our tax rates, they would not add up to the drop in tax revenue that you'll get by a 20% tax cut across the board. So then the question is, how do you cut the deficit? Then you have to come back with some sort of a tax increases down the road that would affect the middle class. So I think the argument that Governor Romney is having on tax will come back to haunt him.
What about the strength of the Republican position on unemployment rate, the unemployment rate being high? Governor Romney seems to resonate better on some of those issues, perhaps because of his background, perhaps because the Republican message has been so directed toward that. It strikes me as though the president is vulnerable on those kinds of issues. People are struggling in this country. How did last night's debate address those? How does the president address that? How do the American people view these two as to who's going to make things better for their lives? Professor Shaw, why don't you start, and then Professor Chaudhry.
I think that both candidates do have the issue of the 8% unemployment rate to deal with, and President Obama is going to seem weak since the evidence is clear that for the last, I think they said 43 weeks, we've had high unemployment. He's making the case that this is because of the policies that were in place before he got there, and I think that's what he needs to get the American people to believe in, that it's not his fault, whereas Romney is really pushing the idea that he could have done things differently, and he chose not to, and this is why we continue to have this 8% unemployment rate. I do believe that Romney's strongest point is that he has worked in the private sector and knows, and he makes the argument that he knows and understands unemployment and employment better than President Obama. What I think is misleading about the idea that the president makes all these decisions is that what actually impacts unemployment rates and the policies that are in place is what happens in Congress. And President Obama could come back and say, I've tried to do things and I was unable to do them, but he hasn't said that. But essentially, what the policies that we've had in place for the last 4 years is not his responsibility alone, solely.
Let's go next to somebody in the audience. Yes.
Good morning. We've had 4 hours and 47 minutes worth of debates between the four candidates. Not a one question broached on any issue or question pertaining to organized labor. The Employee Free Choice Act, not brought up. Where we are in terms of labor law and Act 10 here in Wisconsin, not brought up. Not brought up, I think, intentionally. And I hope when Mr. Goucher has the opportunity to interview the two candidates next week, that he brings labor issues up.
Duly noted.
All right.
I'm really just in the process of trying to decide what the content will be, but I appreciate that, and there's actually been some things said during this campaign about labor issues, so we'll see if that is part of the discussion on Friday.
It is interesting, Professor Chaudhary, that all that happened in Wisconsin, that all that's happening with outsourcing of jobs, with huge fundamental changes in the way business is done in this country. It's talked about, but the role of unions, et cetera, is just not mentioned very much. There have been substantial changes in workers' lives.
Yeah, there has been, and as everyone has pointed out, it has not been in the discussion. Labor unions, labor rights, Act 10 in Wisconsin, those, for obvious reasons, have been sort of kept out of the table in political discussion.
Should they be on the table?
I think they should be. You know, what is happening to labor unions today, what is happening to labor rights, I think it's a fair question.
Mm-hmm. Back to phone calls. Let us go next to Jim in Ashland. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I wanted to mention an African-American columnist from Time magazine, and while I was on hold, I was actually able to dig out the magazine. His name is Touré. T-O-U-R-E with an accent. And this is from the October 8th issue, and his title is The Magical Negro Falls to Earth. And it has an illustration of President Obama as Superman, but with a cast on his leg. And his main point is that should Obama win this time around, it would signify more racial progress than it did in 08. And he talks about in literature and in movies, we have this concept of the magical Negro with supernatural powers whose job is to help a white protagonist reach his full potential. And he's got some examples from literature and movies. And it sounds like he'd be a very interesting guest for you, for one thing. But to extend his concept a little bit further, I remember back in 08 thinking that after the experience with George W. Bush, that any Democrat could have won in 08. If Hillary Clinton had been the nominee, she would have won. Now we've got an entirely different situation. And one of the points that Touré makes is that while there may be a 3 to 5% points of where racial bias could be a factor, it was a minor factor in 08.
Thank you very much for your call.
Now.
Thank you. Let's go to Professor Shaw on this.
If I understand his question correctly, he's asking if this race, if Obama wins, if this is more a test to racial voting in the United States as compared to 2008. And I would argue, based on the abundance of literature that looks at minority mayors and minority governors, that once somebody is elected to office, all the voters are really looking at their performance in office much more than their race. At this point, yes. Does Obama have a strong lead among minority voters? Yes. But it's not necessarily clear that that's because he himself is a minority versus the fact that they are already Democrats and he's a Democrat as well. Mm. So I'm not necessarily sure that this race will be more of some sort of test of how post-racial we've become as the United States, but more, I think, a testament to the fact that we are, again, looking at performance. And that is what both candidates are talking about.
Let's talk a little bit about the base of support for both of these candidates. I saw this Frontline documentary on PBS a couple nights ago, which was really fascinating. And it talked about Obama's initial foray into electoral politics, forming the same kind of coalition that Chicago Mayor Harold Washington had formed, where you have minority vote, heavily organized, and sort of white liberal vote, and it really paved the way for Obama to start his career. Who are both candidates counting on now? What votes are they courting, and can they count on, and where have they gone, the Republicans, beyond where they went in 2004, and the same for the Democrats? Mike?
Well, I think if you're talking about the Obama campaign, they're targeting women, which has been a strength of his. Some of the recent polling indicates the gender gap is closing, and we've seen that. But women definitely, traditional, as you described them, traditional Democratic constituencies. I think the Romney camp is really making quite an effort to improve its rating with women. But I think they're very much targeting white men, blue-collar men. That's an area where they see potential. People who are disappointed with the state of the economy, don't feel enough progress has been made over the last 4 years. A few years ago, we used to call them Reagan Democrats. I think the Romney camp sees potential there. And then there is this group, and we've done polling at the law school. There's this group of what we call the persuadables. The Washington Post did an interesting story about it this week, but Charles Franklin is really the one who's used this term, the director of our poll. And in our last poll, we saw about a 14%, a group of about 14% that we identified as persuadable. And they have moved around a lot. So there's this group in the middle whose politics are not so easily defined. These are some of the same people who, in our poll, have supported both Scott Walker and President Obama. You can't neatly define their politics.
No, I guess you
can't.
And
they move depending on developments in the campaign. And I think what you saw with the first debate in the presidential race, you saw some of those people moving. So. Both campaigns, sure, you're going to fire up the base, you're going to appeal to your traditional constituencies, but both are trying to make an effort to reach some of these folks who are willing to listen. They're willing to listen. They haven't closed the deal with those voters yet. They're still moving around a little bit.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to believe that anybody's moving around right now. I don't get it. How can
We have another poll coming out today, and I think you'll be surprised at how many people are moving around.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What time is the poll coming?
12:15.
Something more to look forward to. Professor Chowdhury.
Yeah, to add to what Mike was saying, if you look at the last 8 years, for example, I think the most significant change that we have seen in terms of voting pattern is in the Latino vote. If you go to the George Bush period, he had 60-70% of the Latino vote. Now it's reversed. Democrats have 60-70% of the Latino vote. And I think that creates a significant problem for the Republican Party in general, not only in the presidential election, but also in governor's election and a number of states in state elections. So that's a significant sort of reversal that we have seen in the last 4-8 years.
Mm-hmm. What about the women's issues last night? Did Romney do himself any good, or did he step into some kind of hot water with, the flexible program? And this is just a thing about me because I don't like to cook very much. And the comment about, women going home to make dinner, I thought, you don't know our household. You can't count on me for dinner. And thank goodness my husband takes up the dining thing during at least the winter months because I don't know what we're doing. But maybe I live in a different kind of world sometimes. I don't know. I like the flexible work thing, I think, but if he had included everybody on that. And I'm wondering how the whole issue about reproductive choice and how that played out last night.
I think that the Romney knows that he needs to find a way to connect again to women's voters. I think Mike is right that he has lost a lot of his female vote. And so I thought yesterday was an attempt for him to reframe the issue around economics, not necessarily around reproductive health. But I think Obama was able to bring it back to the question of how the Republican Party thinks about women's rights and about women's ability to choose their path, which includes, and he was able to, I think, effectively tie reproductive health to economic growth, that if women cannot, or economic ability as well, if women cannot control when they're pregnant, they can't control when they work. And this is a family issue.
I think Governor Romney didn't do himself any favor last night with the question. If you remember, the question was on equal pay for women.
Yes.
And he ended up talking about binders full of women. And that's
the binders comment was all
over. Yeah, exactly. That's what people will remember. So if you're talking about closing the gap, gender gap, he didn't do himself any favor.
Yeah, maybe it was just he should have said resumes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just, just would have taken the whole thing
it's
in
live,
a different direction.
It's live television. I know none of us has ever had any problems saying something that we didn't quite mean.
Right, of course not. We're going to welcome our phone calls, and we also have a live audience. Please remember that you are ever so welcome to grab that microphone and give us your thoughts about all that's going on. And if you'd like to join us by phone, a lot of people want to do that. We'll go to your phone calls. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or talk at WPR.org. We are broadcasting live. We're having a very good morning. I'm so glad to meet listeners and to be here. We're live from the Pabst Theater Pub across from City Hall on Wells Street here in downtown Milwaukee. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Two more phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue our live broadcast from the Pabst Theater in downtown Milwaukee. We're in the pub. I want to remind you, I follow this guy. I'm such a junkie. I follow this site probably six times a day at this point. Nate Silver is going to be with us on tomorrow's program at 10 o'clock. He's, he does this fabulous website where I think that he looks probably better than anybody at all of the polls that are out there. And he's written a book. I haven't read it yet, but I will this afternoon. The Signal and the Noise, Why So Many Predictions Fail But Some Don't. He's a guy who did baseball first, so he knows his statistics. I'm looking forward to it. He'll be good. Okay, well, let's go to another phone call. Should we do that? Let's go to Jason has been waiting a while here. Hi, Jason in La Crosse.
Hi. I'm grateful for the program, grateful for you guys to be there and talking about this stuff. I'm a 36-year-old totally disabled veteran, and I just have a pretty basic issue is what I feel is the lack of integrity and accountability in our political system. And I don't understand why the entire, as a military member, we are required, it's expected of us to have those things and to reach for those things. And when it comes up with someone else, in politics, whether it's Romney or Obama, I very rarely hear anyone say, I was wrong, or this was my responsibility. Facts are very clear most of the time, I believe. And the second part of that was, how is it exactly that President Obama has any influence over the gas prices? And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jason. Who is most compelled to talk first? Mike.
Well, let me address the first part of Jason's question, which is about, the issue of integrity and why don't the candidates come out and say, I was wrong, or I could have handled that better. In politics today, if you say that, the way campaigns are waged, that will be hung around your neck for the rest of the campaign. You will be perceived as weak. You will be perceived as someone who is not strong in your core beliefs. You will be perceived as someone who simply cannot be believed because you mishandled something or because you misspoke or because you said something you now regret. Having said that, I think we've seen at least some signs of this campaign. And let me try to explain this. I think that we've seen a couple of times where the candidates have regretted things that they have said or done. We saw Mitt Romney come out and say, I should not have said the 47% mm-hmm. comment. That was a mistake. Now, you can argue about why he apologized, but he did. Now, it is being used against him. That's my other point. It is being used against him. The president last night on what happened in Libya, saying, hey, the buck stops with me. Mm-hmm. It's not the Secretary of State's, issue. It's me. She works for me. And so you've seen a little bit of that. I think that's an attempt. And I actually think from a strategic standpoint in today's world, people find that refreshing. that I think there are a lot of voters out there who want candidates to admit that they are human,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, a position can evolve over time, that maybe you've had a change of heart on something. But I will tell you, in the world of political professionals, that's not the norm. And they view changes in position, regretting comments you've made, as potential trouble spots for you.
Professor Chaudhry, what about the price of gas?
Yeah, let me take the second part. In the short run, neither a Republican nor a Democratic president have that much of a control over gas price. The reason is there are a couple of other factors that influence gas price. You know, what is happening in the Middle East may have an impact. If refineries get closed for whatever reason, it may have an impact. For example, back in 2008 summer, we saw gas prices in Wisconsin go up to more than $4. So there are factors that influence gas prices in the short run, which is beyond the control of the president. However, in the long run, they can put policies in place which will lead to, for example, a lower trend in gas prices. One thing that, for example, in the short run, a president could do is open up the reserve in order to increase supply, lower the gas price. Mm-hmm. That's an option the president has. But other than that, there is the very little president can do in the short run to lower gas price.
Professor Shaw, let's give this one to you. This is from Al from Land O'Lakes, who asks, why is nobody talking about the environment in this election? Our environment is in serious trouble, and I keep hearing Governor Romney talking about energy independence, but there's no plan to protect the environment. And let me expand on that. There has been criticism of both campaigns that nobody's taken on the issue of global warming. Professor Shaw.
I would agree. Yesterday, I thought there was an opportunity for both campaigns to talk more about the environment, especially when they were talking about energy and renewables and solar and wind power. And both of them are thinking about it very much in economic terms and not about in terms of the environment and protecting the environment. It's probably, my guess is because it's a non-issue for most people at this point in terms of their laundry list of things that are important to them. The environment is falling below what the other issues are, including the economics and foreign policy. And so both candidates feel it's safe not to discuss it.
I think that's very true. And I think, you know, if you're Mitt Romney in the Republican Party, you run the risk of alienating a part of your base if you speak to the global warming issue in a way that you think it is a problem. There are definitely people within the party, if you think about the experience of John Huntsman as a Republican candidate in the presidential primary, and he may have, you know, done as poorly as he did for a variety of reasons, but he was one of the few Republican candidates to come out and say, you know, I do believe in global warming. It's not an accepted theory in parts of the Republican Party. And I think if you're Mitt Romney, why would you want to risk turning off or reducing the enthusiasm of some of the people you need to go to the polls on Election Day?
On the other hand, why wouldn't the president make this an important issue?
I think for the reasons that were just stated. I think it's not, it may be top of mind to some people, but not to most people. Mm. It's still an election, in my opinion, I think in the opinion of a lot of others, it's still an election largely about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe we're moving forward in a way that is going to be good for this country, or do you believe that we're going to have four more years of a long, hard slog? That's really what people are going to have to decide when they go to the polls. I think that's what the election is about.
Yeah. Let's go to Joel next in Nina. Hi, Joel.
Hello. Yes. Really appreciated the discussion this morning. My thought question has to do with a global perspective on things. And don't you think that would add to our discussions about the economy and the future, the past 4 years and the next 4 years, if we understood that we are intertwined with people, with other nations and their difficulties, perhaps? It's so to say that the president of the U.S. is not the CEO of the world and can't be dictating or controlling matters in other countries. So do you think that would help, global perspective on things?
Professor Chaudhry,
yeah,
you want to start?
I agree. Basically, we live in an interdependent world right now. What mm-hmm. What is happening in Europe, for example, does have an impact on the U.S. economy. The slowdown in China will have an impact on the U.S. economy and vice versa. So talking in terms of a global context does seem to be a fair question, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And we talked about this some in the first hour, but the whole issue of jobs going overseas and lower wages and what, how the U.S. responds to that, these are all huge issues, Professor Shaw, aren't they? I mean, they require more than even a debate. You need days and days to talk about this and to gather so many people to look at how we respond to that. What do we create that's different or new? It's just a huge issue.
I would agree, Kathleen. And what you see in the debates and in a presidential campaign is that they can't do that. They can't give you the professor's long answer about why this is complicated and difficult. And so they are trying to pull it down into some smaller bullet points that people can understand. I think yesterday in the debate, President Obama's response to the question about jobs that have gone to China and how some of them are not going to come back, I think was an important way to describe mm-hmm. to the American people that we need to rethink this idea that all these jobs are going to come back to us is not realistic, and that we need to rethink how we try to rebuild our economy.
Yeah.
I was going to add to earlier comments about having more of a global perspective on it. One of the things I've been struck by is how little discussion there is of what's happening in Europe during any of these debates. And that is actually a huge factor in our economic performance. And there isn't much discussion other than a kind of a line, we don't want to be like Greece. And that's really the extent of the discussion. But there are a lot of things going on in Europe right now. It's hard to condense that into a minute explanation of why it's important. And I think the candidates, even though we have a lot of debates, three, and we have 90 minutes or more for each of them, it's still not really enough time in the way politics is practiced
right.
to get into some of these really heavy, important issues.
Yeah. Time for one more phone call. Ricardo in Racine. Hi, Ricardo.
Hey, top of the morning to you, Kathleen. Kathleen, something bothers me about this election. Last time when Obama was running, they asked him so many questions about his church, his religion, and how his minister and how this influenced him. They've asked nothing to Romney. He supposedly is a bishop, and when he dies, he's going to get a planet. And the Mormon Church has had a very bad reputation with women and minorities. And where does he stand on this, and how is this going to influence him if he becomes president?
Mike.
Well, I think there's been some exploration of Mitt Romney's religious roots and the importance of his faith in his life today. I think it's just a topic that I think for the media is frankly somewhat uncomfortable when we begin to look at is one faith better than another faith. I think that's a hard thing for the media to do. Having said that, though, I do think there has been some exploration of the importance of his faith in his family and what he's done as a part of the Mormon Church. Some people may want more of that, but again, I don't think that for most people in this country is the pressing issue. In this
Professor Shaw, do we need more of that conversation, religion?
I agree with Mike. I think that it's the fact that it came up in 2008 was because, was really seen as a way to attack Obama, and I think that the media is not interested in doing that this time around with Romney. He has demonstrated he's a man of faith. Both of them have, and I think that's where they want to leave it. I don't think they want to discuss exactly the idea that one religion is better than another.
Mm-hmm. Professor Chowdhury?
Yeah, I agree. Basically, I think the media wants to concentrate on other questions that may be on people's mind.
All right. Well, this has been fascinating. Look for the poll today at 12:15, where we're going to learn something new.
You can watch it live. It's on our website.
Watch it live.
Marquette Law School, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much. It was just a great discussion, and thanks to everybody for joining us here at the Caps Theater. We just had a great time, the pub next to the theater. Thanks to Mike Goucher, Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University Law School and host of Upfront with Mike Goucher. We also thank Professor Peru Shaw, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Thanks to Professor Abdur Chowdhury, Chair of Economics at Marquette University. It takes a lot to put an event like this together. We'd like to thank, of course, Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers. If you can raise your hands, go and meet them after and give them suggestions for shows. They're both terrific. They produce the program. Our engineer today was Joe Harkey. Joe is over here. Marika Suval screened your phone calls. Thanks to Dave Potraz, Cynthia Schuster, Cheryl Gasser, Katie Mattson, Gina Dragutinovich, Lisa Nalbandian, Grace Lorenz, Jeffrey Potter, and Adam Rosky. Also thanks to Altera Coffee and Cranky Al's Bakery for refreshments. From the Pabst, we would like to thank Laura Miller, Ben Hurst, Tiffany Corris, Bob Zanoni, Paul Smaxwell, Gary Witt, and the Pabst Theater Foundation. Thanks to all of our guests, audience members, and listeners. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Join us tomorrow, and we'll talk the numbers with Nate Silver and more. Thanks so much for being a part of this. It was great. Happy elections.